Data is the lifeblood of every business, as we all know, and it is flowing faster and more freely than ever. But with great data comes great risk. Organizations of all types are drowning. They have sensitive information scattered across cloud platforms, SaaS apps, and data lakes, often with no clear idea of where it all is, who can access it, or how well it's protected. If that isn't bad enough, when trouble strikes, a breach, for example, are they able to tell their customers that the breached data is useless to the threat actors because it was carefully encrypted? Are they able to prove to the regulators that they had the right controls in place and that they have been proactively monitoring their data? This is no longer just their data or your data at stake. It is the reputation and future of any organization that are on the line. I'm Steve Prentice, and this is the Talos Security Sessions Bite Size Podcast. Addressing these scary yet very real problems is where data security posture management comes in. In this episode, we're going to dive into what DSPM really means, why it matters, and how it is quickly becoming a must-have for anyone serious about securing data in today's complex digital environments. And to help us understand all of this, it is my pleasure to welcome back to the podcast Todd Moore, Global VP and GM of Data Security Products at Talos. Todd, good to see you again.
Thanks, Steve. It's a pleasure to be back.
Let's assume for a start that not everyone is fully conversant on what this means. How would you explain it?
There's a ton of definitions out there, and it's amazing how this phrase, posture management, has exploded over the last few years. It's getting attached to a lot of different concepts, data security, AI security posture management. There's post-quantum posture management. It seems like it's become the new buzzword out there in the industry. And that's pretty exciting from a data security vendor perspective. So for us, data security posture management, it's really getting full comprehensive visibility around your data within your networks, within your systems, and then prioritizing risks around that data. You know, what data is more sensitive than other data and what's more riskier? It's around access governance. Who has access to that data and why do they have access? And the one piece that's unique about DSPM, it's really around this concept of shadow data and data lineage. Where did the data come from? How did it get there? Why did it show up? And, you know, we see that shadow data, just like in shadow IT, if you want to use that kind of analogy from the past, is data is just popping up all over the place. And kind of what's driving that in some cases is artificial intelligence. You know, it's these AI systems have access to our data, and they're creating more data than any other systems out there. So a machine perspective, from an AI perspective, we got data popping up everywhere, cloud, on-prem, and data security posture management gives us a way to get some visibility into where our data is going.
When you say AI has access to this, are you talking about how it learns? Is it scanning legacy data as part of its learning model? Or is there another way that AI is using or exploiting the data? Or, alternatively, are you talking about using AI to help with detecting and protecting the data?
It's more around AI, you know, is built upon data. That's the core of AI. And there's different models that are trained. And so that comes from data sets. And whenever you ask AI a question or give it a problem to solve, it creates a solution or an answer. So there is concerns around the integrity and the protection of data that goes into the training and into the models themselves. But I was referring more from a data sprawl perspective, if you want to use that terminology, where AI systems are grabbing information, inferences from a lot of different sources, and then they're creating a new result. And that result can be non-deterministic, just as AI is. You ask it a question, it gives you an answer. And those answers get stored in a lot of different places, which is creating that new sort of data. When I talk about this proliferation of data, if you will, and how AI is driving that, it's really just creating all these new answers that get stored someplace. And that information may contain sensitive details about you and about your company, and someone needs to protect that. So DSPM really helps give visibility of where those data is popping up, if you will, and then being able to give you the insights of what you need to do to protect it.
Well, this is interesting. This then shines some new light on legacy data as well as regular active data, all now becoming so much more dynamic and vulnerable due to the ubiquity of AI. So in terms of DSPM specifically, is this something that every organization should already be doing? Do they need to call in a team of specialists to oversee and coordinate this? Should an organization have a DSPM manager on board the way they have a CISO? Or is this part of everybody's job or nobody's job?
Very good question. You know, where we're coming from at Talos, we're a data security platform vendor. We've built up a platform with a ton of capabilities, capabilities that include data discovery and classification, finding data, all the way through remediating, protecting that data through tokenization, encryption, and a monitoring capability where we can monitor the data in databases as well as in unstructured files. DSPM is really an extension of the data security platform. It really came from the data discovery and classification space. A lot of vendors are putting their mark in DSPM from that space. It came from the DLP, data loss prevention vendors, which were really around classifying the information in your system. So I don't think it's brand new. It's something that we've been doing for forever in terms of really understanding what you have in your networks within your systems and classifying that in such a way to say this may be important. You know, you may want to do something to protect this information. Now, where DSPM vendors fall short is most traditional DSPM vendors work in the cloud. They're as a service, so they're easy to deploy and use. But the idea is they tell you about the problem. They come back and they say, hey, we found some data that might be sensitive to you, Steve. I mean, it could be your social security number, or it could be from a company, credit card information, or other financial information. And the idea is, what's the next step? And that's the part where I think DSPM falls short. They don't really have the remediation, the full broad set of remediations. A lot of the traditional classification companies can classify data, and they might be able to do one remediation. They can delete it. Maybe they can block access to it. But a company like Talos with a data security platform solution is we can offer tokenization, masking, encryption, there's access management. There's a whole slew, a broad set of remediation actions you can take. And that's the area where you see the M in DSPM. It's data security posture management. The M is the management piece. I think that's where we see some vendors not being able to provide the full management of the data. Once you discover it, that's awesome. You've classified it, but now you have to do something to manage it throughout its whole life cycle. And so that's a long answer to your question. The techniques have been out there, but we're now refining it to really make it a more mature solution in today's world.
And is this type of management a permanent state? Like, would you work with an organization on an ongoing basis, or is it a quick in and out type of thing, like installing software? I mean, even that's a bad analogy. I can't imagine anyone or anything in this industry that is set it and forget it. So what is the relationship now in terms of managing this for your client companies?
No, that's a really good question because, you know, a lot of times, you know, an organization at the board level, you don't know what your problem is. So you would bring in this, visibility, data discovery and classification company, and you would try to classify as much of your data as you can. And that's a daunting task. I mean, we're talking a lot of data. So you have to kind of narrow the problem down and try to look at where your most critical data is. That's what you really want to take a look at. But it's not the short answer to your question. It's not a one-off task. You do as much as you can. You get kind of, you know, an idea of what your system looks like. You find the hot spots where your most critical data is, and then you want to fix that. You know, you want to close those gaps. You want to protect your most critical data. And that's from a compliance perspective. If you're, you know, PCI from a payment perspective, so there's a compliance element, but it's from just a general protection perspective. You know, many of the breaches that are occurring today are occurring because passwords or credentials get lost. Compliance laws might not protect that, but you need to protect that so you can help prevent breaches. But back to your question, you can't just do it once. You got to have an ongoing monitoring of what's happening. And you talk about shadow data, or we talk about shadow data and data lineage. As this new data pops up, you always need to be looking in critical areas for that new data that's coming with some criticality. You want to be able to monitor, not just to be able to classify that data, but you want to look for behaviors as well, too, and make sure you're deploying best security practices. So it is a holistic approach. It's not, you know, one and done. It's continuous monitoring, and it's also looking at other factors than just the data itself. It's looking at how people are using that data, why did the data show up, and how people are going to take that to the next step or use that data in a different way.
It's interesting that you highlight actions as well as data itself. Behaviors, anomalies in behavior and such. We hear this all the time with regards to social engineering hacks, for example, that people get tricked all the time. Is this the kind of behavioral anomalies that you would be looking at? The odd behaviors done by humans, because without wanting to blame humans entirely, they always seem to be the consistently weak link in the cybersecurity chain in terms of falling for spear phishing, spam, and all these kinds of things. So would all this fall under the same bailiwick for our behavioral anomalies?
Well, yes and no. So it depends on the company you work with. Some companies are just really focused on looking at the data and matching that to, let's say, a compliance regulation. If it's PCI again or it's HIPAA, healthcare, you're looking for something that looks like healthcare data that needs to be protected. Mm-hmm. Other companies, and you know, Talos is one of them as part of a data security platform, we are adding in an anomaly detection or behavior detection. That's something we've been doing for many years now. And it's important, right, from an insider threat perspective. I mean, I think most organizations, and we just did a data threat report recently where we highlighted that the insider threat continues to grow, right? Whether it's human or it's machine, but those phishing attempts are going up, as you just mentioned, and people make mistakes, machines make mistakes. And the idea is once an adversary is inside your organization, maybe they're meant to be there. They have the right credentials, or they snuck in and they found a credential and they elevated it horizontally across your organization. They now have access to things, right? And you know, that's where encryption and some of your protection mechanisms that I love as a data security guy do fall short. I mean, if Steve, you're supposed to have access to that database, then you should have access to that database, but you need to be looking for other indicators. I mean, Steve never had access to the database before, and he's doing it at a time at night or from a location that doesn't really make sense. And he's starting to exfiltrate things that he shouldn't be. So it's really, you know, really adding that intelligence. So, you know, all these insider threats, which are the most common causes of breaches today, you can get a lot of it protected through encryption and other remediation techniques, but you also need that element of having the camera, having someone watching to make sure that, you know, whoever's accessing that data is doing it in the right way. Hope that makes sense.
Oh, totally it does. I mean, the thing is, it's like these APTs or these nation state hackers just jump in there and just lurk around inside a system coming in from some exposed port on the internet, for example, that nobody has patched, and then they're lurking around. So I see enormous possibility if that falls in under the same kind of wheelhouse. Are there other kinds of blind spots? We've talked about behavioral anomalies here and, of course, data integrity. Have you seen or are there other kinds of blind spots you may want to warn a client organization about?
Sure. So I think that secrets have become a key area. We've talked about encryption keys and making sure that you've managed those encryption keys. And encryption is an amazing control, and it's adopted by many privacy laws. And we know that it helps once a breach occurs to protect your information. But the emergence of secrets, developers are constantly developing solutions that require pen codes, passwords, QR codes, ways to get access and authorization into systems. And unfortunately, secrets aren't managed the same way that other encryption key material is managed today. And those passwords and some of those credentials get put into GitHub, GitLab, different open source repositories. They get stored in cloud storage areas. They're actually hard coded into software itself. And it makes it easy for when the adversary or malicious person gets hold of those things to find really a way to get access into other systems. And so, you know, managing your secrets like you manage your encryption keys is becoming a huge problem for organizations. I think at the CISO level, many folks are saying that we have to get our arms around how developers are using secrets, how they're protecting them, and really put that full lifecycle manage around a secret like we have on encryption keys today. And that means from the time they're generated, they're rotated throughout their lifecycle, and they're deleted when they're not using them anymore. So I think that's a blind spot that organizations are dealing with.
Including the deletion. Is that something that you see, people forgetting to delete things after they are done with them or after an employee leaves? Is this a common problem that leaves the door open for bad actors?
Absolutely. You know, go back to the AI, agentic agents, or just AI in general, right? I mean, great thing about AI is if you give it access, it's going to go find things from your past that you had forgotten about.
Yeah.
And things I had access to 10 years ago, I might have a password on my laptop or in one of my network shares that I used 10 years ago to get access to some data that I should have had access to at that point in time, but I probably shouldn't have access to in my new role. But, you know, these AI engines are going to find that. They're going to find that key or secret was never deleted, and they're going to use that to get access into a system that maybe they shouldn't have access to, into some data they shouldn't have access to. So very high level example, perhaps, but it does cause a problem that these things are orphaned and sitting out there. And that's part of DSPM as well, too, is really giving you visibility into everything in your network from a data perspective. But where Talos wants to go, and I'll bring it back to Talos, is we do see these orphaned keys and secrets, and we need to include that in your visibility as well, too. And that's another piece. Directly answer your question, yeah, keys and secrets are left orphaned, and they need to be found and deleted.
Okay, so now up until this point, we've been talking about data as a sort of general concept. And you did mention HIPAA and a few other things earlier. But is there anything else that you want to add with regards to, let's say, to large organizations that have distributed data in multiple cloud situations and SaaS platforms? In addition to what you've already said, is there a different perspective or strategy for those organizations that have a complex cloud arrangement in their organization?
I think it's important to have common policies and security best practices across your whole environment. I think the point I would make is that everybody today is operating in multiple clouds and multiple SaaS, software as a service applications. Nobody's beholden to one cloud service provider. And that's really from a high availability, reliability perspective. I think, you know, most large companies want to have a business continuity plan that goes across multiple. The other piece that we're seeing, and it's not just an old trend, but it is emerging, is a lot of folks are expatriating their data. They're bringing data out of the cloud environments back on-prem. We're seeing that because of the regulations and really sovereignty. The way the world is working from a geopolitical perspective, as you can imagine, a lot of countries and organizations want to protect information, within the confines of their physical country or building, if you will, again. So we are seeing an emergence of on-premise as well as multi-cloud. Maybe to answer your question more succinctly is, you need to have the same sort of controls and the same visibility, not just in your cloud environments, but also in all your cloud environments and SaaS applications, but also on-prem as well, too. So hybrid is becoming a much more predominant way that we have to secure our data going forward for information.
So now, again, we've been talking about this. I'm not going to say in generic terms, but we have been talking about every company. Are you able to share with us a story of how DSPM has helped a specific company? No names need to be involved, of course, but how it helped a company avoid a data breach or a regulatory penalty?
Sure. So, breaches are inevitable. We know that. People are going to do their best, and machines are going to do their best to cause a breach. We have examples of where breaches have occurred in large healthcare organizations, and they were able to minimize the impact of that breach. And reputational damage can hardly be measured, right? It's so huge. And mm-hmm. so when the breach mm-hmm. occurs, being able to tell your customers as well as regulators that you've protected the information through encryption, the data was stolen, but it can't be really looked at. And so we rendered it useless. So we have examples, a lot of examples in that area. Another class of examples that we have is really after the fact. Unfortunately, breaches have occurred and data has been lost, and regulatories come in, agencies have come in and said, now you have to add, controls to make sure it doesn't happen again. And you have to tell us you have the right controls in place. So from a data monitoring perspective, we have examples of where we've been able to monitor systems and provide a quick response or at least actionable data based on what we see within the networks. And then the third class, which is more to your question, is by being proactive. And see, what we see a lot of times, unfortunately, is organizations employing data activity monitoring after something bad happens. But there mm-hmm. are examples of organizations, a lot of them are regulatory based. It's in the healthcare, the finance, the government organizations that have deployed activity monitoring ahead of time. And that's the most important way to really help detect that a breach is happening. And then once you see that a breach is happening, being able to respond very quickly. So those three classes of where our products are deployed have helped minimize the impact of breaches or downright stop them by getting some insights before it has gotten to be a full-blown event. And so, we have those types of examples. I won't give you the names, but I can tell you that the regulatory industries seem to be more keen to putting security best practices in place. I'm hopeful that extends to everybody soon, because data is data. It doesn't matter if you're in a regulated industry or not.
Yes, absolutely. This is so useful. So much detail and useful knowledge in this short period of time, Todd. Just marvelous. So I think from my question collection here, can we sort of turn around and look ahead to the future? How do you see this evolving over the next couple of years? I mean, obviously, we're living in dog years here, where 1 year equals 7 in terms of the advancements we have. What are we looking at? Are there adjacent technologies you might think might merge with this or influence it or change it?
Sure. So data security platforms aren't going away. More and more capability is going to be, you know, added to data security platforms. I think data security posture management is really an extension to a data security platform. We're going to see a convergence there, right? I mean, DSPs already had capabilities around visibility and being able to monitor risk and then to react to that from a remediation perspective. I think you're going to see a much stronger convergence to the data security platform vendors, consolidation, if you will, in the industry. But it's going to expand. The use cases are going to expand. You're going to see moving away from the data to the keys and secrets, like we already talked about. There's this thing called quantum computers that will come around someday. And a lot of organizations are working to understand what's going to be impacted by that quantum computer. And so there's going to be visibility and posture management needed in that area as well, too. And of course, AI. We need to understand how folks are using AI systems, are they using them right or wrong, and how to manage those. So I think you're going to see the data security industry continue to expand to add visibility and protections across all these new emerging type of technologies. That's kind of where I'll leave it is we'll continue to see the world expand based on the technology itself.
And I guess the big worry there, of course, just like ChatGPT, for example, is that people tend to race ahead without doing their due diligence along the way to see what they're actually doing with the new technologies. So I'm phrasing this really as a question here, but you can imagine organizations not fully encompassing the entire scope of the risk as they struggle to keep pace with their competitors who are using AI to be creative or whatever. So is there a risk here that people are going to be rushing too quickly?
It's amazing you said that question or asked that question, Steve. You've set me up nicely for our data threat report. We just launched the Talos data threat report a couple weeks ago where, you know, it's 5 years of us talking to over 3,000 IT security folks. And we talked a little bit about AI in that report. And the number one finding we found around AI was exactly what you said, not to repeat it back completely, but it was the rush. Everybody at the board level feels like they're missing something.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Everyone's rushing to implement AI within their systems because they don't want to be left behind. But it's kind of like when everybody went to the cloud, right? Everybody rushed to the public cloud 15 years ago and security got to be the afterthought. And,
yeah.
You know, unfortunately, that's the way it works in our world. Now organizations are saying, my goodness, 80% of every organization is starting to use AI, but a very few of them have put the right security controls in place. So there is a little bit of a race to catch up there. Things like data security platforms and AI security posture management, whatever, you know, catchphrase you want to use, are going to help organizations, you know, put those controls in place and to monitor that they've done it correctly. But yeah, that's definitely an industry problem at this point. It's the race to be not left behind and then missing some of the controls to protect your information.
Okay, so the last question, Todd. Clearly, organizations know they are able to turn to Talos for assistance and guidance, and they have the report, which, by the way, can be accessed through a link in the show notes. So what advice do you want to give? It is always nice to end our conversations with some kind of advice for security leaders or IT teams who are just perhaps starting to explore DSPM more fully, or maybe even need a bit of a refresher. What should they tackle first in order to get their organization prepared for your services or simply some best practices that they should bring in if they haven't been using them already?
I think that we all recognize that there's data in our organizations that we don't know about and that we need to protect. Any guidance I would give to anyone trying to go into this space is there's tons of vendors out there, and a lot of these vendors can give you visibility into where your data and your gaps of your system or where there are gaps in your systems. But be careful there. Make sure that you're not being very focused on just cloud and one cloud. As we said earlier, you know, folks have data in SaaS applications. They have it in multi-cloud vendors. It's on-prem. So you want to make sure you're able to comprehensively get a view of where your critical data is. And that's hard, but you can start small and grow. You know, pick maybe databases first or, you know, some known file servers or storage and work from there. One of the other pitfalls I'd say to watch out for is a lot of DSPM vendors tell you the problem. They give you the visibility. They tell you where you have problem areas, but they don't give you a way to solve it. So It's almost like they tell you about the problem, but they don't give you the solution. Or they give you one solution. The solution is just delete the data. I mean, something critical showed up in the database, delete that out of the database. I think you want to look for a vendor that can give you a broad solution set. You don't always want to just delete data. You might want to control access, prevent access, limit it. You might want to encrypt. You might want to tokenize. You might want to data mask. There's all kinds of things that you can do, and you want a whole bunch of solutions that you can do there. So you want a really broad set of remediation activities. And then the last thing that we already talked about earlier in the podcast is whenever you're monitoring your data, and you should do that, don't just focus on the data itself in terms from a classification perspective. Look at those behaviors, look at the risks of what's happening with the data and prioritize those risks, because quite frankly, having sensitive data needs to be protected is a core tenet. But a best practice is really understanding how folks are using that data. And if they're using it in a bad way, you want to be able to flag that and stop that sort of behavior.
A lot of food for thought here. You make it very easy to understand, and perhaps more importantly, easy to justify the activities that need to be done next in order to ensure an organization's data security posture management policy is mature and ready. So, Todd Moore, Global VP and GM of Data Security Products at Talos, thank you so much for joining us here today on the Talos Bite Size Podcast.
Thank you, Steve. It's been a pleasure. Hope to see you again soon.
Remember, if you like what you hear, please be sure to subscribe and tell a friend or a colleague or a client or all of them about the Talos Security Sessions Podcast and the Talos Bite Size Podcast. We will be back again soon with another episode and another discussion on the topics that you need to know about to successfully carry on in the business of information security. Until then, I'm Steve Prentice. Thanks for listening.